Welcome to Troy and Michael Speak. This is Troy, your resident host, writer, counselor, and channel for the Michael Entity, and this is our podcast as offered from truthloveenergy.com. Troy and Michael Speak is a monthly or bi-monthly podcast offering tools for nurturing, understanding, and building your universe. Much of the information offered here is based in what is called the Michael Teachings, and through my work as a channel for the entity that's known as Michael. For more information, please see truthloveenergy.com for basic introductions, community, and services regarding my work with Michael. This is episode 2.1 in February of 2007. Hello, everybody. Yep, I said 2.1. That means there will be a 2.2 this month. Yay! I'll tell you a little bit later in the show what to expect from episode 2.2, which will be released very shortly behind this episode. So however you get your podcast, keep your ears open for the next episode. Actually, I probably will forget by the time we get to the end, so I'll tell you now that it's going to be a really great conversation, a great interview with a group of students here in New York City, so you can look forward to that. It was very nice and pleasant. Okay, on today's show, we're going to start off with a new segment that's been consistently requested called the Energy Report, in which Michael comments about the psychic quote-unquote weather ahead for the next few weeks for all of us. And in the news, we'll cover Michael's comments about the somewhat comical NASA astronaut who was nabbed in a foiled murder plot, which turns out to be, according to Michael, a cross-lifetime karmic dance of secret love, betrayal, greed, and murder. When I posed this question to Michael, I had no idea I'd be in for the bizarre romp through time and space, and so this news is definitely worth visiting, even though it sounds kind of hokey. We'll continue our Back to Basics segment with a very simplified introduction to the concepts of frequency and male-female, or also called focused creative energy ratios that are a part of our essence, and what these terms mean in relation to describing our unique personalities as seen through the Michael teachings. Also, in Beyond the Basics, we're going to discuss Michael's perception of hauntings. From our listener's email came a great question from Matthew about how the older soul can attract and find other older souls in one's own city or other geographical area of the world. Again, as usual, I wasn't expecting Michael's response to that. I'll be curious as to your personal responses as well. And if we have time, I'll read some more listener emails. But we're going to end the show with a really great mini Michael on defensiveness. Okay, so I want to thank PodSafe Music Network for all of the music that will be used in my podcast from now on, for the most part. That's a really great service, and one of the criteria is that I include a name or a mention of their name, which is fine with me because that's a really nice thing that they do. And it's also a really great way to find some beautiful and obscure bands and musicians out there, so you should check it out. I don't remember the link. The link will be in the show notes, so you can look for it there. Or just do a search for PodSafe Music Network, and you'll can find it. I'd especially like to thank Love Spirals. That's one of my long-standing favorite bands from a long time ago, who is still making beautiful music in all kinds of different ways. Because they are actually the ones who alerted me. Alerted their fans, actually, to this podcast resource because they also put out a podcast. And I will be using their offered music quite often because it's beautiful, as you've already heard. So look for links to all the music in the show notes, which can be found at the truthloveenergy.com site. Okay, so what's going on with me these days? Well, it's strange when I ask myself that question, and or I have someone else ask that question of me, because I feel like I'm running around super consumed with demands, deadlines, and serious concerns. But then when I really think about it, I realize most of what fills my time and uses my energy is just that, thinking about doing these things. I'm really not that busy or overwhelmed, but I sure do tend to take on a lot of projects that really could be completed within a relatively fair amount of time. But what I tend to do is have a huge array of quote-unquote things to do hanging over my head, like in the sky of my life. And then I just sit down under an umbrella and think, okay, I'll take care of that one right away as soon as I take this nap. And I've realized that I have a serious issue with procrastination. So, guess what's going to be the theme for March's podcast? Woohoo! Procrastination. I really want to get to the heart of that issue, and I know I'm not the only one who suffers from it. And really, it causes those around the procrastinator to suffer too, and it's not just a matter of laziness or something flippant. It's like a serious brain malfunction or some kind of emotional blockage. I don't know what it is, but I really want to understand it. And since I'm doing a lot of work on myself to try to improve my work for you, I think it's time to get to the heart of that. In March's podcast, if I get around to it. Okay. Oh, you know what? I wanted to clarify that these podcasts are really geared toward those who have taken the time to study the terminology and the teachings, at least to some extent, because that'll allow for me to, you know, more freely speak without having to explain everything. There will continue to be a back-to-basics part of each podcast, so that's going to help a lot of you get on board. But to get a real leg up on what the hell I and Michael are talking about, it would be a really great idea to just jump ahead and read the basic intro at the truthloveenergy.com site. This will really, really add to your joy of listening to the podcast tremendously. Or pick up a Michael book from a bookstore or something. That'll really help you a lot. Also, if you're listening and you hear a term that you can't seem to find at the site, because there is a glossary there, or you would just like more clarification about, just send an email to me at podcast@truthloveenergy.com, and I'll make sure it gets clarified in the next show, or at least in the forum where I'm going to have it set up for us to discuss each episode. There is, like I said, a handy glossary at the site where you can just look up a word by name. So if you don't find it there, I will add it. Just let me know it needs to be added, okay? Thanks. Okay, so let's get started with the energy report. And I'm sorry for the cough. Keep in mind that the energy report is basically Michael's way of interpreting energy that's happening around the world that's sort of generated by our collective beliefs, our actions, our consciousness, our unconsciousness, and much in the same way that the actual weather is predicted by meteorologists, so are these energy reports sort of laid out by Michael. Except that Michael does not, and I state that emphatically, that they do not predict the future. What the energy report is then is it's more like a picture of a momentum of energy as it looks to them at any given time. And that energy could shift at any time, just like our weather can shift at any time on the planet. So there's not a lot of prediction involved as much as there is just observation of patterns. A lot of the Michael students really love these energy reports because it's a way to at least consider things from a higher perspective, and in the same way that you can look at the weather for the day, you can then make better decisions about what you'd like to wear, if you need an umbrella, etc. So don't take these too literally, but do use them as a general guideline if you want. I mean, the worst case scenario is that the concepts offered in the report just might inspire you on their own, so, you know, just enjoy. So what I'm going to do now is read the energy report to you as it came from a recent live chat, and then we'll go from there. So the energy report. As the year moves further into the goal of dominance, we have seen most of our students responding with a strong urge to get back on track, to make a difference, and to finally do whatever it is that has not been done that is thought to be a fulfilling factor in the life. So far, it appears this dominance energy is a soft energy that is not feeling like an imposition, but more an inspiration, a true motivation. Many of our students will probably notice a sense of clarity and focus, even if still cloudy from the momentum of previous years of emotional challenges. Above the cloudiness, so to speak, is a clear sky that most now know is there and are simply doing perfectly healthy inner and outer exercises to be more open to this clarity and focus as it rises in the life. We can see that most of our students are dealing with issues of discipline and choice. In the weeks ahead, this appears to become more emphasized. In other words, the questions will arise in the midst of choice: is this going to bring more control and choice to my life, or am I simply being compulsive? Compulsion is a state of action that is based on habit, familiarity, and false motivation. You will clearly see your compulsions in the weeks ahead. In fact, for some of you, this may come as sore spots, as in, why do I keep doing this? We suggest a gentle assessment on those moments of realization, because that is the entire point, to discover why you keep doing that. Consider this. When feeding your body, the foods you provide become the familiar sources of everything your body needs. It knows only what you have given it, and more accurately, only knows what you have most given it. If your body is craving energy, and you have only fed it candy as a source of energy over time, then when energy is craved, candy will be craved. However, in the moment of craving, if you were to offer an alternative source, the body may not be thrilled with this difference, but its process of this alternative will add to its ability to choose or crave more appropriate sources in the future. In future cravings, then, your body may still wish for the familiarity of the candy, as it has had plenty of practice in digesting this source, even if it's not the most appropriate or beneficial, but your choice to offer the healthier alternative will soon take, and it will then be the new source of craving as it learns, as the body learns the benefits. This is the same for you on other levels, intellectually, emotionally. The quote-unquote food you have always given yourself is not always from the buffet you would have created for your life. In many instances, your compulsions are based on the teachings or foods of someone else's buffet. But it is all familiar and digestible, so you continue to feed yourself from those sources. The first 3 months of this year is an opportunity to choose differently, to redirect your hunger, and to bring you to the table of nutrition that is yours. We realize we are using poetic food metaphors, but we believe this is effective in bringing you to an understanding as to why do I keep doing this. Over the next 4 weeks or so, it will do all of you well to observe your choices as a matter of food intake. Is this food from your table or someone else's? In fact, it will do you well to literally observe how you go about feeding your body. Do you merely treat it as an inconvenience that must be fed, or that must be done? Do you feed it as a way to shut it up? Do you bring kindness and thought to your choices and digestions for your body? Key phrases that one can use over the next few weeks may be, slow down, or is this the food of choice or the food of convenience? Simply slow down and make your choice. Teach all levels of your bodies a new spectrum of possibilities and nutrition. The support and energy for this is present in the weeks ahead. So that's the energy report as we got in during a live chat last few weeks. And it's really pretty good all the way through March. So when we have our March's podcast, we'll get the energy report for the late part of March and the beginning of April. And actually probably April, we'll probably be looking ahead April, May, and June. So you guys can see like these different arcs of energy that are happening and keep track of it. So let me know what you think of that energy report and how you think it applies to you. I'd love to hear from you at podcast@truthloveenergy.com, or you can go to the forum and have this discussion with other students. That would be great. So let's move on in the news. Considering this is February, and there's a lot of emphasis on relationships because of Valentine's Day, I thought we'd start with in the news with what Michael has to say about the astronaut woman who drove across the country in Pampers and a wig with a steel mallet ready to kill another woman who was messing with her astronaut man. So first, let me read to you the report as they have it at smokinggun.com, which is just a hilarious site that keeps track of any kind of big celebrity news or just hilarious arrests in the news. And the funniest part of smokinggun.com is almost always the pictures, because they put the mug shots up of celebrities, or in this case, this woman who drove across the country in Pampers with a steel mallet ready to kill this other woman. And the picture they put up of her is just really, really pitiful. I really feel bad for her, and it looks like she has a spider on her head with these dead dangling legs, but it's really just her hair. So, and she just really, I don't know, it's disturbing to see, but, so you gotta go over there and check it out, smokinggun.com. I'm sure it's still up there somewhere. So the headline reads, "Astronaut Nabbed in Murder Plot. Police Affidavits Detail Bizarre Tale of NASA Love Triangle." So this is from February 6th. So here are the Florida police reports detailing the arrest of NASA astronaut Lisa Marie Nowak. I think I'm pronouncing that properly. Who is facing charges that she allegedly plotted the murder of a female rival for the affection of astronaut William Oefelein. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Nowak, a 43-year-old mother of three, was arrested early Monday after attempting to attack Colleen Shipman, a 30-year-old Air Force captain, in a parking lot at Orlando International Airport. I'm going to try to keep from laughing. This is so sad, but it also makes me laugh. According to the Orlando Police Department reports, Nowak drove 900 miles from Houston to Florida when she learned that Shipman, whom Nowak believed was involved with the 41-year-old Oefelein, would be arriving there by plane. Nowak, who told cops that she only wanted to speak with Shipman, was wearing a wig and trench coat when she tried to accost Shipman at the airport. After dousing Shipman with pepper spray as she sat in her car, this is the woman who said that she wanted to just have a conversation, was spraying the other woman down with pepper spray as she's stuck in her car, the disguised Nowak fled but was apprehended later at a nearby bus stop. That picture in my head is just hilarious. A trench coat, a wig, standing at a bus stop trying to act unassuming while she's just plotted to murder someone. So before her arrest, police reported Nowak had disposed of her trench coat, wig, and a BB pistol in an airport trash can. A subsequent search of Nowak's auto and handbag turned up other incriminating evidence, including a steel mallet, a new folding knife, emails from Shipman to Oefelein, and handwritten directions to Shipman's house. This woman was driving 900 miles in a diaper, and she was not going to stop there. She was going to go to her house if she had to. She needed to get her man from this Air Force captain woman. Nowak was first charged with attempting kidnapping, battery, destruction of evidence, and attempted burglary. Prosecutors added the attempted murder rap today and filed a new charging affidavit detailing the felony charge. When Detective William Becton asked why she needed all the weapons in her possession, Nowak said she only planned to scare Shipman. She was going to scare her good with all those tools. When I mentioned to Mrs. Nowak that I figured she had come to Orlando to kill Ms. Shipman, Mrs. Nowak said that she was never going to hurt Ms. Shipman, wrote Becton, who noted that Nowak could not provide a reasonable explanation for possessing all those weapons. So is this hilarious or is it just sad? Because it makes me laugh, but it also makes me feel kind of sad for this woman who felt so driven to do this. But even more interesting is Michael's response to this, which just blew my mind. So pay attention, because it's going to take you... You might want to get your pen and paper out, because Michael's going to talk about the past lives of this situation and how it plays into the current scenario, and it can get really confusing. So get your pen and paper ready, or at least pay really close attention. Actually, what I thought I would be doing is bringing up this interesting situation for Michael to comment on, and then move on to more important topics. But when I asked him about this, it ended up being such a fascinating story about how relationship dynamics can carry over across time and lifetimes. I was very happy that I had asked. And also, sometimes we get really critical about what tends to be a distraction in the media during times when it seems more important issues are happening in the world. And to a great extent, that's a legitimate thing to be annoyed about. But we do have thousands of news resources from which to choose, and we don't always have to look at what's being piped to us through the mainstream. So while it might look like the news is dominated by these these crazy, silly scenarios, it's really just a part of the wave of news that's available at any given time. So it's all a matter of choice. But more importantly, what I'm fascinated by is the attraction to these kinds of stories by people, or even the repulsion from people. I've heard a lot of people just being so annoyed about the coverage of that particular story, or Anna Nicole. And it fascinates me, not only the attraction, but like when people get really hostily angry about the fact that it's in the news at all. I mean, you have a choice of what to watch and what you see or what you explore. So it's I think it means something when we're attracted or repelled. And according to looking at Michael's response to this scenario, it looks like some of our attractions and repulsions may be rooted in something much more metaphysical than we'd ever considered. So let's hear what Michael has to say about this and the situation that went from sinister and potentially deadly to something comical and fodder for nearly all the mainstream news, at least. Did you guys see all that? The headlines reading Astronaut. Astronaut. Lust in Space. That's hilarious. That's pretty clever, I have to say, as a sage. So, okay, let's get started. So the channeled material for the people involved, Michael has Lisa Marie Nowak, the person who was driving across country in her diaper, as being a second-level mature artisan. Colleen Shipman, the person who was the target, as a third-level mature scholar. And the William guy, Opheline, as a fourth-level mature scholar. So here's what Michael had to say. While this may appear to be a strange and somewhat comical scenario, it is actually quite universal and familiar to all fragments experiencing sentience. It is a painful, devastating, and compelling experience to work through feelings of loss, personal worth, and the burning of karmic ribbons. So there you go. Leave it to Michael to put things in perspective. First, the three fragments involved are all within the beginning levels of the soul age that we describe as mature, which is inherently wrought with emotional challenges and issues related to ideals in love, relationships, and personal worth. Second, this scenario extends beyond what appears to be three primary participants, and not only includes the primary arresting officers in balancing what we call a karmic ribbon, but does not even involve William, the fourth-level scholar, at all, the man that was being fought over. The fragment now known as Lisa is a second-level mature artisan, while the target, Colleen, is a third-level mature scholar. The man who apparently completed this triangle, William, is a fourth-level mature scholar. Two additional fragments are part of this karmic balancing, and they were two of the primary arresting officers or detectives who intervened, one of which is a server and the other a warrior. The police officer, who is the warrior, is the essence twin to the artisan fragment, who is Lisa, the one who was driving cross-country. The arresting officer was her essence twin, while the server and the warrior police officers are task companions. So the two police officers, there were a lot involved, I'm sure, but according to Michael, you know, they, you know, on an energetic level, there were these two task companions who were the ones who arrested Lisa, and one of them was Lisa's essence twin. Many students tend to believe that karma pushes a person into situations that have been created in a past life, and that the fragments involved are drawn in some by some kind of predestination or fate, but this is hardly the case. All involvement in the process of balancing karma is a product of choice, or at least the product of allowance, which is a passive state of choice that encourages a natural unfolding of events. So I think Michael is saying here that, you know, karma, or what looks like the, you know, the balancing of karma that started in one life, some people get really upset about how it, you know, it doesn't seem fair that in the next life you have to pay for what you did in a previous life when you're a different person. But Michael is saying if that's not the way it works at all. That as an individual personality, you still have choices, and you can not fulfill the karma, or you can avoid it, you can fight it, you can do whatever you want. But I think eventually our essence designs a personality that will be interested in balancing the karma. So that's where choice comes in, is that you just naturally have choices that lead you back into situations to help balance karma. But no one is fated. So back to Michael. Sometimes a scenario on the surface is far different behind the scenes and has nothing to do with what it ends up looking like. In this case, Lisa was on her way to creating a rather violent and interruptive karma with Colleen, but was stopped by the arresting officers, the warrior, and the server task companions before she could do much harm. The compulsion of Lisa's to harm Colleen was driven by her personal issues of self-worth, loss, delusion, and paranoia generated from within this lifetime, but certainly not a new theme for this essence. However, she was also driven by her allowance of a karmic compulsion to create a scenario that would allow for the burning of karma between the warrior officer, who is credited most directly for intervening, and the scholar, who is Colleen, the target. Quite often, when karma is created that involves murder or betrayal, as the soul matures, it doesn't wish to simply reverse the situation, with one having been murdered in a past life now being the one who does the murdering as a means of balance. Instead, the mature and older souls who still have these categories of karma outstanding will choose and create far more exotic, clever, and creative ways for balancing these intensities that were caused by the initial scenario. So according to Michael, let's say you don't, if you get killed in one life, you don't necessarily have to go kill that same person in the next life, but you might instead, the person who killed you may actually save your life in the next life, so that the karma is balanced by that kind of that kind of intervention than the actual tit for tat or eye for an eye. So as our souls get older, we find more gentle, creative ways of balancing even the worst of karma. So back to Michael. In this case, the current scenario is a perfect example of this creativity. So here we go into the past life. By God, this is just bizarre. So in the past life of the early 1900s, the warrior, who is the officer in this lifetime, was the wife to the scholar who is known as Colleen in the current life. Okay, yeah, that's right. It's just very confusing. So let me read that again. In the past life of the early 1900s, the warrior, who is the officer in this lifetime, was the wife to the scholar who is known as Colleen in the current life. So, the arresting officer was actually married to, as a wife, to the scholar Colleen, who was the target. So they weren't essence twins, but they were husband and wife in that past life. In that life, the warrior wife was consumed by a greed that was not only fixated on material goods, but on sexual and emotional attention as well. During the time of the marriage between the warrior and the scholar, the warrior had hired a young local boy to work in the business that the couple owned and ran. With a lot of strategy and manipulation, this warrior wife was able to convince the young boy to be her secret lover. The boy, who is an artisan, is the artisan who is known as Lisa, who drove across the country looking to harm Colleen, who was the husband in the past life. During the lifetime where the warrior was enjoying the boy as her secret lover, she also managed to not only keep this from her husband and everyone else, but she was also able to move the young artisan boy into the home. As the artisan was a lost, confused, and deeply sensitive creative soul, this arrangement seemed to be to his benefit. He eagerly took shelter in the attic of the home. He lived in the attic! Although there are a myriad of details into which we could go about this story, we will simplify this as much as possible. For over 10 years, the artisan boy lived in the attic of the warrior wife and the scholar husband, undetected. The husband, of course, did begin to suspect and inspect stronger and stronger ways, but was often pacified by quick and clever explanations from the warrior for the missing food or the sounds in the home, and even sometimes the surprise of the presence of the artisan boy around the grounds. As the relationship between the warrior and the scholar continued to disintegrate, verbal violence increased, worrying the artisan boy in the attic quite often, until one night a massive thump was heard after a rather vicious argument, with the warrior wife going silent. This caused the boy to leap down from the attic with his gun to protect the warrior wife lover, and then shooting dead the scholar husband. It was only after the sudden scenario settled that the warrior wife was able to explain that she had only tripped and fallen, and the husband had not tried to harm her at all. However, there was now a dead body with which to contend. Now, I'm not sure what happened after this, because Michael, seriously, there was so much information that started coming through, I couldn't even take the time to do all of it. But this past, going back to Michael, this past life scenario does not end there, of course, but the makings of karmic ribbons among all involved were a complex entwining that lasted for many years in that lifetime. For one thing, although the artisan boy did the shooting and the killing, the karmic ribbon for the actual murder was created between the warrior and the scholar, the husband and wife, because the boy was a mere pawn for much of what were the choices and demands of the wife. My God! So he, even though he pulled the trigger, it was because of all the manipulation and mind-fucking that he had endured, that he's sort of kind of just a pawn for the wife. Fast forward to the current life, and you'll find that Lisa was the artisan boy who is now on her way to harm or even kill Colleen, the scholar husband, again, the scholar husband from the past, when the warrior, who was the wife in the past life, who is now the police officer, was able to intervene, allowing for all of life to continue. So this intervention balanced the obvious karma, in effect giving back the life that would have otherwise been taken if the artisan's plans had continued. So the artisan boy was Lisa in this life, and she almost would, if she hadn't been caught, she probably would have killed Colleen, which would have been the same scenario in the past where the artisan boy killed the husband. But the wife, as a way to balance the karma, was the police officer who intervened, keeping the artisan from killing Colleen. It is so bizarre and complex. So back to Michael. The media hype over this story is quite similar to the lengthy media hype that haunted these same people in the early 1900s, even generating books and films about this bizarre story of secret love and murder. In effect, the story that had begun in the early part of last century found its conclusion in the early part of the next century. So, my God, if you followed that, you are a dedicated listener. And look back over your notes, you'll see how fascinating it is. Now, here's the thing. It just baffles me anyway to just ponder the possibilities of this really being true as background for this wacky news. But Michael commented that these people had been in the media in the past, too, so there must be a record of this. Well, I did a search, which was really difficult to find, but I did find a scenario that matches what Michael described. And now, I already know that I can never prove that the channeling came first and then the research, and I'm not really interested in impressing anyone, you know, with the channeling, or even letting this stand proof as proof that Michael is real. But when these things happen to me, let me tell you, on this personal level, I really get shivers. I don't even know how to describe it. I just get a chill, because it doesn't matter if I can never prove this to the rest of the world, but for me, it's all I need to keep me doing this incredible work with Michael. It kind of freaks me out, actually, even though I've been doing this for over 20 years. It's just mind-blowing to consider that the past life scenarios exist as part of a present life scenario, but it's even more mind-blowing to me that Michael or some amazing part of my creative brain can access information in a way that's beyond my understanding. So you can look at this. I don't remember where I found it or even a link for it. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. But I did find a story about a woman who kept this lover in her attic, and there was a movie made about it too, but I don't remember what the name of it was. So I'll look that up to put into the show notes so you guys can discuss that. But let me tell you, it was amazing to find that information after getting it through channeling. Because I'm a retard when it comes to history or news in general, so it's always impressive to me to have this consciousness come through me and give me this kind of detail. So anyway, that was very, very fascinating, and I hope you found it fascinating too. And that's probably enough pondering, so let's move on to some more introductions to the Michael teachings for all the new students, as well as review for the older, more advanced students in our Back to Basics section. Okay, so back to basics. Now, if you remember, if you've been listening to the podcast, in the last episode, we covered the very, very basics of Michael's primary philosophy, and then we covered the essence, sort of the introduction, a very simplified introduction to the essences and the seven roles that an essence can play in the universe. And, of course, many people think they're limited by the concept of choosing only one of the seven basic roles, in essence. They think that that's limiting in some way, but that's just the beginning of the descriptions for your soul, according to the Michael teachings. Your essence could be... It's kind of like saying which race you are, and that's not really that accurate of a comparison, but just for simplistic purposes... it's kind of like saying what race you are, and you know that does not define you beyond only a very certain context. So you may be black or white or Asian or Hispanic, but then you have a whole bunch of distinct features and definitions that define who you are within that context. So in the same way, you may be one of only seven roles in essence that are found in the universe, but upon looking closer, there are some very, very unique designs that make up what your soul is individually. So let's look at energy. Look at the energy that's part of your soul's design. Now here I'm going to be reading from the site, so it's the same thing you'll find if you go to truthloveenergy.com and look in the basics introduction. So here we go, energies. There are many ways that an essence is uniquely designed, but here are a couple of the basic elements that contribute to that uniqueness. Focused/creative energy ratio, or a male-female energy ratio. This is a specific way your essence designed itself to approach life in general and is measured by a ratio, such as 75-25 or 34-66. This ratio never changes across your lifetimes. But we eventually learn to find balance for our specific ratio, attracting people and events to help us with that task. So focused energy, or also known as male energy, is very definite, linear, planning-oriented, direct, forceful, aggressive, action-oriented, tangible, protective, etc. And creative energy, also known as female energy, is abstract, it's nonlinear, it's spontaneous, it's omnidirectional, it's inspiring, passive, emotional, intangible, and nurturing, etc. Those who have much higher male or female energy, which is above 60 in either direction, can tend to have strong tendencies in one direction over another. This means they will naturally be more creative or more focused, regardless of other factors. So a high female energy warrior has the potential to be as creative as an artisan, for instance. As you study the Michael teachings, you will learn about the various factors that might dampen or enhance a person's male-female energy expression. Sorry. The goal of a soul is to eventually find a balance in its ability to use that energy. Male-female energy has nothing to do with the gender of the body or with sexual preferences. It is part of the dynamic of the essence, which has no gender or sexuality. Male-female energy has nothing to do with mannerisms, jobs, social roles, etc. If a woman is working in construction, this does not mean she has higher male energy just because it is traditionally a man's job. Likewise, if a man is effeminate or is a house husband, this does not mean he has more female energy just because this is traditionally a woman's job or a woman's mannerisms. Your energy ratio may influence your choices regarding the use and expression of your skills, but you are never restricted by that ratio. Most people are more restricted by the stereotypical expectations of a society rather than their own internal dynamics. Although we've been focusing on the male-female energy ratio of the essence, the physical body does have its own properties of male-female energy ratio. It could be said that a physical body without an essence, without a soul, is 100% male or 100% female energy. When an essence moves into a body, the energy of the body begins to shift to accommodate the focused creative energy ratio of the soul. This adjustment usually takes about the first 7 years of life. A higher creative energy boy child may be very aggressive, direct, demanding for those first few years until the more creative energy begins to settle in. A higher male energy girl child may be very quiet, spontaneous, explosive, but her soul's more focused energy until her soul's more focused energy begins to settle. So as children, we may behave like the body's dominant energy ratio or energy, but we, after about 7 years, we start to come into bringing more of our soul's energy through. As your essence begins its very first few lifetimes, it will usually approach life from the higher of the two ratios, choosing more comfortable bodies to match that higher ratio. That means that if your essence has higher female energy, you may start out a long stretch of lifetimes literally as female. As your essence gains experience from within its natural ratio, it will tend to choose experiences, relationships, and genders to help generate balance. After many, many lifetimes, a higher male energy person may actually choose a life with an emphasis on the creative, since he or she will want to work on balancing. Those with ratios of around 50-50 tend to be more flexible and balanced in their approach to life and do not necessarily have challenges with this design. This does not mean their ratios are better or worse, simply that they chose other areas of life for which to be challenged. Note: in sexual intimacy, people usually have more profound or satisfying sex or intimacy with those of proportionally reversed energy ratios. For instance, a 35 male, 65 female energy ratio person would, quote unquote, fit more physically with a 65 male, 35 female ratio. This isn't a rule, but it is a definite ingredient contributing to the experience of sexual intimacy, regardless of gender or sexual preferences. That's very interesting. So now let's move on to the next energy to consider, which is frequency. Frequency is the exact point on a defined spectrum of energy that represents human sentience. Here is a highly simplistic way of understanding why Michael describes our essence as having a frequency. In the same way that there are radio waves and a specific radio is tuned in to a specific station because of a specific point on its dial is set to receive that specific wave within that frequency of radio waves, so there is a specific station, quote unquote, to which a human is tuned within the frequency of human sentience. So higher or lower frequency has nothing to do with being better or worse. Your frequency is how your essence relates to and processes experiences in relation to how other humans do so. Your frequency defines how you experience the energy of physical and non-physical environments, from the way you experience a city or a room to how you experience the demands of a relationship. Knowing your frequency helps you understand how your essence digests your life experiences. When you know your frequency, this gives you a better picture as to how your essence tends to take in life, how it tends to relate to your journey of experiences. A person with a high frequency, 65 or higher, tends to take in life at a faster pace, processing events swiftly. The benefit of this is that these souls can move through experiences, gather what they want, and move on. The challenge is that one can tend to skim through an event, missing all the important parts, then continue to repeat that experience over and over in different forms until the important parts are finally digested. Those with a high frequency can literally store unprocessed events and experiences as a kind of vibrational pattern within the cells of the body or as emotional patterns. Then, when an occasion arises or they get stressed, they can then recreate the same situations through their reactions and interpretations, simply pulling in new players in a new setting until they finally finish with that particular process of growth. Only the individual person can determine when he or she is done with a pattern. These reoccurring experiences, reactions, and interpretations are not imposed on you. An essence with a low frequency, 35 or less, tends to take in life very slowly and tediously, processing it with a great attention to detail. The benefit of this is that they can indulge completely in an experience, take as long as they need, wringing it for all it's worth, and never needing to go repeat it again. The challenge can be when one resists an experience he or she has begun. This person will find it excruciatingly difficult to leave a situation, while at the same time resisting all growth within it. Since this frequency is more solid, the resisted events and experiences begin to settle into the body as ailments, illnesses, accidents, or they can become emotional apathy. If an experience is resisted to the point where it becomes physical, then essence will begin processing the basic energy of the denied event by dealing with its physical elements. While this is not a bad way to process experiences, it is not any fun for the personality. So basically, a person with a lower frequency, if they don't deal with life very well, they can tend to make themselves physically sick as a way of dealing with it. More on frequency. You'll tend to feel more comfortable with people within about 20 points of your own frequency point. For instance, if you have a frequency of 62, you will relate to, communicate easily with, and find general resonance with those who have a frequency of up to 82 and as low as 42. Being with someone outside of that range can tend to have its challenges. This 20-point range of flexibility isn't as limiting as it may seem, considering that another essence can also move in with his or her own 20-point range. As an example, let's say one person has a frequency of 35 and another has a frequency of 70. The person with the frequency of 35 would need to tune to a higher frequency, stretching as far as 55, while the other person would need to lower his frequency as low as 50. This gives these two people about 5 points of common frequency with which to relate. These two people may tend to have trouble maintaining constant contact or sustained intimacy, but the stretching of the frequency can lead to some very exciting experiences. What if a person's frequency is 19 and can only go as high as 39, while another person's frequency is 72, only able to go as low as 52? This leaves a gap of about 13 points. Anytime there is a gap, there's usually a need for bringing in a bridging factor of some sort, such as a third person with a frequency that will accommodate both, acting as a conduit or a mediator, kind of like a bridge. These so-called gaps in frequency are what help bring more people together. It should be noted that an event or situation can also act as a common point between two distant frequency points, such as spiritual pursuits or games or common goals. So just because you have, you know, it might be a stretch, you can get other factors involved that will bridge two frequencies that are far apart on the scale. An interesting note is that in a room full of people, the frequencies of all people will gravitate toward a most common denominator. If the common denominator frequency is a stretch for someone, he or she will most likely feel proportionally uncomfortable. During adolescence, particularly in a school setting, we tend to go through a locking of our frequencies and refuse any fluctuations. And it is at this age that we are most inflexible and tend to remain within only a few points of our own frequency point. And this is what leads to creating cliques in schools and can contribute to strong divisions among groups. So that's really fascinating to look back about that. So in conclusion, male-female energy ratios and frequency are two ingredients of our essence that make it unique in its strengths and in its challenges. We choose these factors as souls before our lives even begin, and these factors have much to do with what our essence generally sought to experience throughout this whole grand cycle of lifetimes. So now what we're going to do in our next podcast is look at how the soul matures through gaining experiences, and that's called Soul Ages, and you can look forward to that in the next podcast. So now let's move on to, or beyond the basics, what is a ghost? Does the fragment actually fail to cross over for a period of time, or is it just the personality that stays here? Or is the fragment's higher self here as well with the ghost, or something else entirely? What is it? And here's the response from Michael. There are several different scenarios that are commonly described as hauntings. 1. Beacon haunting, wherein a fragment has left a portion of consciousness in time and space as to complete a simple yet vital process of integration. Living haunting. Another scenario is when a fragment's personality has not realized or accepted death. remaining locked in an echo of itself for no other reason but as an attachment to the life just lived. Essence usually leaves that portion of consciousness behind, knowing it is perfectly capable of integrating it later. This allows for complete freedom of the personality even beyond death. This kind of haunting is not usually marked by a pattern, but by apparent randomness and lifelike expressions as that personality continues to live within a familiar environment. These ghosts are the most conscious and capable of communicating intelligently with the living. Most do not, however, and remain living perfectly believable lives, just slightly askew from the frequency you would call physical reality. This is more common than can currently be comprehended. Wow, that's called a living haunting. So beacon hauntings are when a fragment has left a portion of consciousness behind so as to complete a part of the process of its integration of that lifetime. So it's like a beacon left behind. Then the living haunting is where the personality thinks it's still alive, pretty much. And then there are reality burns, according to Michael. Some hauntings are the emotional echoes or burns of fragments who are actually still alive. Some fragments have such a dynamic or disturbed or passionate infusion into reality that some of their energy remains behind as a form of haunting. These hauntings usually diffuse when that fragment dies or when the emotional energy behind the haunting is resolved or processed. Some of the scarier hauntings can be explained as this type of haunting, as the anger of one fragment is left behind, affecting the next fragment, whose fear is then added to the burns in reality. Quite often, a designated space is declared as spooky or haunted, drawing expectancy among those who are within its vicinity. If anything startling happens, a burst of energy is added to that collective energy within that space, and then that becomes part of the haunting itself. These hauntings can easily be cleaned from the reality into which they have been burned. And then there is what Michael calls generated haunting. This is more an extension of the reality burn haunting than as a category unto itself, but we describe it separately because its origins and sustenance are dependent on stories that nurture its presence. This haunting is the result of people telling stories about a certain environment and then contributing to the energy required to minimally support those stories. These hauntings are rarely able to be substantiated, but are the subject of fun, spooky experiences that contribute to the energy that is haunting. Bed and breakfast, restaurants, landmarks, and other tourist locations that claim hauntings are a prime example of this. We spoke in response to your term ghost, but there are several categories and scenarios that might be under that heading. We spoke only of those scenarios where sightings, smells, and sounds are the main symptoms. Moving objects, vocalizations, violence, terror, etc. fall into categories beyond what we would call hauntings. We will also add that our phrases to describe the different versions above are not static. We used phrases that can easily be changed or more creatively defined if one feels it necessary. So basically, even though they call it generated haunting, reality burns, living haunting, beacon hauntings, you can call them whatever you want if you find it fits better. So a person who asked this question follows up by asking, if it is just the personality, is the higher self still able to integrate the lessons from that lifetime if the ghost doesn't cross over, and can the person incarnate again while their ghost is still here? Michael says, essence can easily incarnate into a new life even while haunting a previous life. In fact, essence can manage to have several lives being lived across time and space quite easily. Essence uses less than 1% of its entire source of energy for the management and sustenance of a single lifetime in all of its variations across parallels. So this gives you an idea of just how much energy it has left to be creative in ways that may seem incomprehensible. Wow. That thread was going on in the forum for a while, and I put it here as part of Beyond the Basics, because it is Beyond the Basics. And so you can go there and add to the discussion or send an email to podcast@truthloveenergy.com and let me know what you think of that. So now we're to the listener emails, and I got a lot of emails from everybody, from a lot of people, and I really appreciate that, especially on the Yahoo Groups list. That was very nice. A lot of support for the show and a lot of contributions. And I had to pick through some of the questions that were offered because some of them were about Iraq, about very big, important things happening in the world, the election. And I would really like to get to that, but I really need to dedicate a whole show to that one topic and not just have it as a segment. So that's why I picked this smaller one, and I asked this question of Michael, and I was, again, as usual, surprised by the response. So this is from Matthew, who asks, I'm curious as to good strategies for finding and connecting with other older souls being or other older soul beings in one's own city. Old souls are spread all over, and there are vectors and agreements for hooking up, but I'm wondering about doing all one can to meet those with a similar soul age and or lessons. This is not a question just about physical plane activity, but also about preparation and inner work. A social question to a very social channel, Matthew says. And Matthew, you know me all too well. So here's what Michael had to say in response to that question. For the older soul on a planet primarily inhabited by early mature souls and run by young and baby souls, the experience of isolation and aloneness can be quite strong. This is not a feeling generated by the actual essence or soul, but one that is generated by the personality who is experiencing an inner conflict between the utter uniqueness of who he is as a means to connect with whomever he chooses, regardless of soul age or interests, and the heavy imprinting that is difficult to shake that tells you that you must find like-minded others as sanctuary and validation for who you are. In fact, it is often the case that the older soul specifically chooses not to incarnate within or live within populations housing many older souls because this encourages the entire point of the older soul's goal, which is eventually to absolutely love oneself wherever he is. The older soul has come to at least some vague understanding as to how vast this universe truly is and how literal it is that we are all fragments of a massive wholeness. And this can lead to absolute terror for the older soul, which is why we describe the older soul as learning most of his lessons through terror. Terror is actually the powerful retrieval of ancient knowledge gained from all the personalities across time and lifetimes, and having that knowledge accessible for practical use. The experience is utterly terrifying to the personality because it means losing all attachments to who you are now and allowing room for all that you are. We mention this because in the question for how one can find older souls, part of the answer is in that one must own that old soulness before one can attract and nurture relationships with other old souls. Until then, it is fair to say that you attract your equals at all times. If you find yourself surrounded by young souls, it is your young soulness that you have not integrated or accepted. If you find yourself surrounded by the drama of mature souls, it is your own lack of maturity that may be drawing to you these experiences. Again, it is not about whom you interact with in your life, but how you interact. And by interact, we do not mean to merely endure or to put on false faces, but we mean to encourage your looking at the truth of who you are, even when alone, with those of dissimilar interests, or even in your longing for those of similar mind. You are a spectrum, and until you have embraced that spectrum, it will be very difficult to truly shine in your world and to attract those others who may also be shining. We say this because it is more often the case that upon meeting other old souls, the old soul finds these other old souls to be simply crazy, annoying, disappointing, inappropriate, uninteresting, etc. And this, too, is because these are the words you may be experiencing as a way of describing your own old soulness. In short, be yourself, and your old soul friends will find you, and you will find them. Vectors and agreements are for essence to manage, not for the personality. Your job, so to speak, is to simply be yourself. It is not a simple task to simply be yourself, but it may help if we define that as embracing who you are, how you feel and what you are doing at any given moment, and owning your choices from that place, and then doing that all over again in the next instance, and the next, never being attached to just who you are now. Whoosh! So, what do you guys think of that response? What are your reactions to that? For me, it feels liberating to read that and to ponder that, but it kind of surprises me sometimes how easily we get off track from just something as simple as being who we are, and then we don't understand, really, we don't grasp how that cascades an effect out into the rest of our life. This response from Michael kind of helps put into perspective how we can repel the very kinds of people we think we wish to have around us and attract people we think we can't stand, but they're actually the ones we actually need around us. So we got to give ourselves credit for, on some level, managing that to be exactly what it is that we need. The more we embrace who we are, the more balanced the palette of friends become. It puts things in perspective. So I'd love to hear your feedback about this, and I'll also make sure you go over to the forum and comment about that part of the show there. That'd be really great. So now let's move on to what the last segment of the show I'd like to have before I head out of here, because it's been over an hour. What I'd like to do is, well, now that Michael's put us in our place, let's go ahead and move into the topic of for the mini Michael. And this is a piece that Michael offered on defensiveness. Defensiveness. Okay, defensiveness is the direct result of anticipated attacks upon something that one feels is in need of justifying, in need of shielding from criticism, or in need of requiring an immediate advantage. Defensiveness can be as obvious as physical reactions or as subtle as controlled explanations. It should be clarified that to defend is quite different from being defensive. When something is quite literally attacked, it is a valid response to defend that which was attacked, particularly in instances of physical harm or danger. Defensiveness, however, is a preemptive stance, a state of perception that assumes a threat with an imminent attack, even when unwarranted. When one is defensive, one is always responding to the past. A defensive stance can almost always be traced to a single concept, expression, feeling, or behavior that is in the fragment or in the person as needing to be right and validated. Somewhere within the life, the person has been told he or she is wrong, or that she merely assumed she was wrong about a personal truth. She now struggles to uphold her shaky truths against the internal and external beliefs that contradict her. She battles against phantom or symbolic representations of anything remotely challenging her efforts to uphold these overshadowed, unintegrated truths. Defensiveness, then, is a navigational alert to areas in which one has not integrated a personal truth. Ironically, true validation of a new personal truth cannot happen when one is defensive. Validation is a processing of integration that can begin either internally or externally. Both internal and external validation, however, must be completed for true validation. The trap of defensiveness is in its perpetual struggle for external validation, as it inherently dismantles the validity of personal truth. Personal truths are not consistent and not necessarily shared with other people. What is true for you may not be true for another. That's what a personal truth is. Defensiveness, then, is a trap because it requires immediate agreement on these personal truths, yet also assumes immediate threat, usually drowning out even the smallest chance of agreement. Defensiveness is always on the level of personal truth, such as, I am not ugly. As global truths, such as gravity, and universal truths, such as love, require no defense. The paradox here is in that personal truths are always externally validated. There is not a single aspect of your immediate environment, body, relationships, and world that is not an external validation of a personal truth. There is no exception. The perpetuation of defensiveness comes from the fact that the fragment has yet to internally validate some new personal truths. A concept, expression, feeling, or behavior must be integrated and true for oneself before it can be a truth shared and validated with other people, with another person, with the world. In other words, if ugliness in the world is actually your personal truth, you will find proof of that around you. However, if you struggle to uphold an ideal of beauty that is not yet true internally for you, you will tend to be defensive about your concepts of beauty until they are actually true for you. If you trust and accept your own truth about beauty, you would then allow others to validate that beauty and be able to extract facts of reality that support that personal truth. Any disagreement with you would be seen as simply that, a disagreement, and not something needing to be defensive about. Understanding defensiveness as a navigational tool, one can begin to immediately make a difference. When defensiveness arises, it is your new truth being protected by you as it finds its footing in validity within you. We suggest when one begins to feel defensive, stop. No matter how embarrassing or awkward the situation may be, one can always stop being defensive right there in the moment. The first measure of defense is to stop. Next, claim your defensiveness. If it is appropriate, honor your natural wisdom by openly acknowledging your defensiveness. There is no need to apologize for it, but one can easily state, "Wait, give me a moment, I was being defensive." Acknowledging your defensiveness can immediately diffuse a situation and even alleviate another person's defenses too. Do not explain. That's the next thing to consider. Do not explain. As soon as you begin explaining your defensiveness, you've merely substituted one form of defense for another. Either gently affirm the differences between yourself and another and be okay with that, or change the course from a defensive context into a discussion. We define discussion as a sharing of concepts, expressions, feelings, and behaviors that does not require agreement. Determine exactly what personal truth is being reflected that brings forth your defensiveness and clearly determine what truth you seek to implement in its place. For example, your truth is that the world is, or that you are, ugly, but you wish your truth to be that the world is, or that you are, beautiful. Your old truth? The world is ugly. The new truth? The world is beautiful. So differentiating those two can help you get some perspective and some footing. Relieve others of having to prove your truth for you. Assume that you're the explorer of this world, yourself, and your relationships, and it's your responsibility to uncover the facts about your truths. Allow the process to be fun. Actively choose to see, feel, hear, know your new truth around you and inside you. Because an old truth will have become quite integrated, it may take the physical plane reality time to catch up to the changes you are implementing internally. This means it might require some keen awareness during the initial changes of your truths. All experiences remotely hinting of support for your new truth should be noted and celebrated as validation. Eventually, your reality will unerringly support your new truth as easily as it did your old truth. You can also use visualization or imagination to implement a new supportive reality. Do not fantasize, but rather use visualization or imagination as a beacon. Do not ponder how the world would be if only, as this will assume a gap between your new truth and reality. Instead, use your imagination and assume that it is completely capable of extracting from, inviting to you, and navigating you toward your new truths. Give yourself credit. Whether in recognizing your defensiveness or ultimately implementing your new truth, it is always suggested that one honor that process with self-reward. And that's what Michael had to say about defensiveness. They went on to suggest these things to ponder about it. Identify an area of defensiveness in your life. How would you describe your old and new truth in that defensiveness? And remember, defensiveness is where you have a truth, like you believe you're really ugly, And you get defensive when that's brought up because you have a new truth which says, I am beautiful. I know I'm beautiful. But you get defensive about it because you haven't integrated that new truth. You don't really believe that you're beautiful. So how would you describe the old truth and the new truth in that defensive context? And how much more empowering do you feel knowing that you're simply being alerted to this new truth, needing your active internal validation? And by that, I think that the question is asking, knowing that being defensive is just an alert, does that make you feel like you have a little bit more empowerment so that you can make the changes consciously? So that ends our podcast for February, our 2.1 podcast. The next podcast that's going to come along will be an interview with students here in New York City. It's a wonderful recording that we did at a vegetarian cafe in the West Village, and there's lots of coffee sounds in the background and music, and it recorded pretty well, and we were a little self-conscious talking about personal things in public, but we did a good job, so look forward to that. I really hope you enjoyed this show. I hope you enjoyed the music, and I would really love for you to come to the website, truthloveenergy.com, and participate, and look for all these great changes that are going to be announced in March, with a private courses being offered, new services being offered, and a very different format for the site I hope to implement. But until then, enjoy what's there, and go to the forum. There should be a link on the main page so you can discuss this podcast and tell your friends about it. And I would really appreciate it if you guys would write a review in iTunes. If you subscribe through iTunes, write a review for the podcast. Vote for the podcast at different podcast services. And I'll put some links in the show notes that you can do that. And any support you have for the show would be great. I love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. And I look forward to sharing more with you in the next one. Have a great day.